You're so distracting. Sorry. On the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step four. Please welcome our panel, Anna and Kate. All right, we are going to begin the second half of step four on page 67. And step four states, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Miss Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we, ourselves, set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble.
All right, who wants to go first?
Hi, everybody. My name is Anna. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Anna. Anna.
Can you hear me?
That's...
this one.
Oh, that's why it wasn't working.
It is.
Okay, sorry. All right. Fear inventory. Gosh, I learned so much about my fears by taking this part of the step four process. It's hard to explain and hard to put it into words. And I started out looking at the examples that Bill gives us, and I couldn't find the string that attached everything. I was still relying on myself to make my own decisions and not realizing everything that was affecting my life. And once I got down to getting rid of that top layer of garbage that was on the, I guess, conscious level of what I was what I thought life was and what surrounded me, and I started to get into what I really was afraid of, I shocked myself. In finding out of some of the deep level fears that I had. And because of that, it kind of opened up Pandora's box for me. And I started to realize things, and then the dots for me started to connect. And I started to realize why I did a lot of the things that I did. You know, why I was afraid to be a true person, a true friend, a good neighbor, a good daughter, you know, anything. It's because I had all these fears sort of protecting me like a shield. And I would stay like 500 feet away from anyone, to make a close personal relationship with anyone. at least that's what I found out about me. There's a laundry list, but I don't think you guys want to sit here and listen to it. So on that, I'll pass it off to Kate.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kate Atwell. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 12, 2005, and my home group is Third Door on the Left. We meet Thursday night at 7 o'clock in Virginia Beach. I agree a lot with what Anna's talking about as far as fear. I remember the first time when I was in my first year of sobriety, and my sponsor asked me to make a list of my fears, and I wrote things like crickets. Because crickets freak me out. You like can't see their eyes. There's just like antennas, and what is with that chirping noise? And I don't like it. I don't understand it. I don't want any part of it. Because I thought that's the kind of thing we were talking about, right? Like that stuff. Not the stuff that I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and sit with, and I feel that cold black ball in my stomach. Not that stuff. I thought we were talking about this kind of stuff, you know, the real simple surface type stuff. So recently I wrote a fear inventory, and one of the things I wrote on there, I have a son who's 6, and I'm afraid of being a bad mom. That's a real fear. And, you know, I have to look at, well, what is that fear made of? Where does that come from? You know, what is that about? And start kind of picking that apart so that I can do some work with that and address the fear and do some things to, the fear's never really gonna go away. But like, why do I feel like that? What am I afraid of? What am I scared about? I'm usually worried about the outcome, which is none of my business. That's God's business. And so like, if I can start kind of picking that apart, that fear becomes less of a fear and more of, okay, it's just something else that we're working on. I also like in this reading, again, we're reminded, you know, my problems are of my own making. They really are. And my fears are generally the same things. They just, like, I think I've dealt with it. They go in the other room, they put on another outfit, and they just come back. So usually my fears, even if it looks like one thing, it's that same thing from before. They tend to be the same kind of, like, bedrock foundation type things that have trailed along behind me throughout my sobriety. And at various points, I'm more or less successful at letting them run my life or steal my serenity. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And we're going to move over to page 68. It says, perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
This is a hard one. It was hard for me to understand how I could rely on God to remove something that I have lived with and grown comfortable with for so long. You know, now that I was aware of it, you know, how do I make that something that God's in charge of? I've never done that before, so I had no idea. So in reality, once I settled down and I stopped thinking it over and making it something that it's not, and you know, and I took that deep breath and just let go, and I was just like, there's nothing really I had to do except just, you know, let God take care of things that I can't understand, or I have no business in, you know, getting my nose involved in. I always thought that, you know, I was a good Christian person, and you know, that I believed in God, and when I realized how much I did not depend on God from this inventory, it's like looking so deep inside of yourself that you don't even know who you are. And I remember my sponsor asking me after I had finished taking these steps, and she asked me, after step four, she asked me, how do you feel? And I told her I felt like shit. And because I had seen myself for what I truly was. And then she asked me if I knew who I was. And I had to stop and think about it instead of giving my usual quick response, you know, like I know everything. I just like, there were tears coming in my eyes and I was like, I have no idea. So that made it easy for God to really come into my life and start, for me to start trusting in things that I had never trusted before, because I had emptied out all of that nonsense that had been festering inside of me for so many years. I don't know how else to put it into words that, you know, this step just was the most amazing step for me. And it really changed my life.
Thank you.
So I had a really hard time with God when I got sober, because I had wished to die for so long and had continued to live that I didn't think there was any way that God was real. Because how could someone, something who was supposedly so loving and merciful and all of these things that I had heard at church over the years growing up and in my adulthood, how could that exist? And then my miserable, horrible, sinful, terrible, I mean, I'm not like, and I was not a good person. I was not a Christian. I was not doing any of that stuff at the time. So, you know, to me, that was really hard to get on board with that. But my sponsor at the time when I was new, she'd been sober for 6 years. And to me, that sounded like infinity. And so I thought, well, I don't know if I believe, but I know she believes. And she's not drinking, and she's staying faithful to her husband, and she's going to work every day, and like her vehicles are properly insured, her pets go to the vet. These are all things I can't do. So I was like, I'm just gonna do what she does. And, you know, let's just do that. Because I remember saying, she's like talking to me about prayer, and I was like, well, I can't do that because I don't believe in God. And she said, okay, well, you're going to do it anyway. And I said, okay, because, you know, I'm dying. So I'm gonna take some suggestions. I'm going to take some direction, and we're going to see how it turns out. Well, my sponsor always likes to point out to me about this part, because I'm a doer. I'm an action girl. I think I'm supposed to be out there just doing stuff all the time. She likes to remind me that this is about direct God to what he would have us be, not do. It doesn't say what God wants us to do. It says what he wants me to be. So, I'm 42 years old. I still don't know who I am. I've been sober for a minute. Still don't know who I am. I'm somebody's mom. I still really don't know who I am. You know, I'm kind of like, And I don't really even know who God is all the time either, and I'm okay with that. You know, if I really believe that God is everything and infinite and all of those things, then that's okay that we've only been working on getting to know each other for this long and we don't know each other 100% yet. That's cool. But I'm willing to do what this paragraph talks about, which is to trust. You know, it's kind of like that part in Indiana Jones where he goes to step on that bridge and he doesn't know if it's there, and he's got his leg out straight with his foot straight and he goes to step and the bridge is there. That's my faith. I'm trusting that something's going to happen, and I'm not going to fall into this chasm and die. I'm not sure. Still got my fingers crossed. But my faith says, do it. Do it anyway. Act like it's my one friend. She's always like, well, what would it look like if you acted like God was working? You know, I'm like, oh, geez. All right. Well, if I act like it, then what I do is I just take that step. Because that's what faith is just putting that foot down, even if I'm not sure, not 100% sure if something is going to catch me. Now I have some time that has evidence of God catching me, but it still takes a second where I'm like, okay, one, two, three, jump. Okay, I didn't jump. One, two, three. You know, it might take a second, but I'm gonna do it. And that's what that looks like for me with my faith. It's just taking that, gotta step out on it and just see what happens.
All right, thank you. And then we will be continuing on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off track. Here we find human opinions running to the extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
Go for it, Anna.
Okay, I was not a good girl, as Kate referred to. Not in any, anyway, in my mind I was. That's it. And this inventory certainly made that very, very clear. My goodness. This was a very long list. There was a lot of things in there that I had thought I would never tell anyone ever in my entire life. But it was, I don't know, it was like magic writing, you know. It was like I got on this roll and I just started writing everything that had happened. I was like, you know what? I want to get this horrible feeling that I don't know where it comes from. And like Kate was saying, that I want to die. And the only thing that made me feel better, but then again made me feel worse about myself, was the drinking. And I didn't want to go back there. So I wanted to dig as deep as I could, and I started that list, and I started to put down everything, every horrible thing I had done, with who I had done it with, and who I had, you know, been unfaithful, done things that, you know, I never thought in my entire life that I would have ever done, because I thought I had good moral conduct. But when I had judged myself terribly, and realized though that when the moment presented itself, that I would just jump into it, because it was just like I realized that I acted on impulse, you know, and this inventory made that for me. I became very much aware of that. So I mean each section lights up another area of my life that I need to work on. And this one, it made me realize, you know, that I thought that I always needed to be with someone, and that the only way that I could be with someone is through having, you know, sex instead of having an intimate relationship with someone, and on and on and on and on. And when I took a look at that and saw that, you know, I was hurting not only myself, everybody that I had been dealing with, I don't know how to explain it. It's very hard to put into words. It's just a feeling that you have that kind of changes your attitude, and thinking about that God reliance, and I'm like, that's not how I think that my God would want me to live my life, you know, and that I should, like, I can't rely on myself to make a decision as far as who I want to be with or where I want to be. So I just need to, like, rely on something bigger than me to take care of that for me. Because my past clearly shows that I made mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake, you know, and mostly with relationships. There were so many times in my history, and I'm a little bit older than her, so I have a much bigger sex inventory.
I don't know about that.
But anyway, there was times in my life there was like no lapses between relationships because I had felt that it went back to the fear. I was so afraid of being alone. And it's all started to connect together. So I started to see the string connect, you know. And that's how it started to work for me. And I started to realize, you know, that, you know, how insecure and how much I did not like myself, you know. Thinking that, oh, because I'm having all this sex, that I was a very sexually confident woman. That's not what I found out. I found out quite the opposite, you know. So each part of this step that I took, I found out more and more and more about myself. And a lot of it wasn't pretty. A lot of it wasn't pretty.
So I always like this paragraph so much because God bless these guys, right? This is over 80 years ago, and Bill is in his room with his little pencil and his little paper, and he's writing about this. And when I got sober, I thought that this train had permanently left the station, right? Never gonna go to a club, rub up against some guy, flirt, you know, meet somebody, go on dates, have sex. None of that is ever gonna happen again because I'm not drinking anymore. And how do you do all that stuff? Now, I mean, I don't have to be hammered, but you know, you gotta have one or two to steady the hand before you get into that kind of stuff, right? So how am I supposed to kiss somebody I've never kissed before if I haven't had a couple of beers? I don't really know how to do that. So I read this and I was like, first, you know, never mind that when I'm drunk, I'm like the most brazen, you know, I'm on the bar with the thong song, showing my age there, the whole nine yards. But, you know, but to try to like talk about it in any sort of honest, frank way, no, we're not gonna do that, no. I saw this novel recently and the title of the novel was Slightly Shady. And I was like, right, slightly, that's me when I'm drunk, I'm slightly shady, right? So that's part of why I love this, because it's like, hey, this is an issue. And when they say sex, I don't think they mean just sex. We're talking about dating, romantic relationships, any boy-girl stuff or boy-boy stuff, if that's what you do, or girl-girl stuff or a throuple or whatever you're involved in. Because seriously, I don't care what the configuration is, everybody has some kind of issue, and I love them for saying that. Yeah. It's like, this is going to be a problem. Get ready. And it's like, great, this has always been a problem. Maybe we can try to solve it now. I'm super excited. So I remember reading this with my sponsor, and I like blush. And I mean, I see Laura. Laura's known me for like 100 years, and the idea that something would embarrass me is hilarious, because once I got sober, I was just kind of like, what's up? Like, here, you want to read my inventory? You want to like talk about it? I mean, oh, this one time, blah, blah, blah. Like, I was just like all with like everything everywhere. Laura's not, and she knows. But, you know, there's a happy medium. Eventually I found it. Maybe not based on this talk. I don't know. But the idea that I could have a sex problem and we could look at it and we could figure it out and God could be involved and we could move on and stay sober, aces. I am down with that. So I love that this paragraph is in here because Bill's just like, we're just going to let's just say the words. Let's just write the words. Take a deep breath. Okay, we're going to keep going. I love how matter of fact this is, because it just takes all the shame and stigma and embarrassment that I felt about that stuff my whole life up until this point, and all the stuff I had pulled over the years, and it just turned it into one more thing. We're gonna have to sort it out. We're just gonna have to sort it out. No problem.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ryan.
It's my turn.
I could talk for like a really long time, so you don't want to pause like too long, because okay. It could go on for days.
My bad. Moving on to page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got all this down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
Okay, so, you know, when you initially start writing your list and, you know, it's the beginning, that first column, and it's like fever, you know, just write. And then you have to get to that other side where you have to list where was I at fault? You know, where was I selfish and dishonest? See, that's the hard part. And that was like a really hard part for me. And I had to look at that and say, what? I wasn't any of those things. It wasn't my fault. I didn't do nothing. I'm the innocent victim here, you know? I mean, there were some things on there that I had to take really close look at, because even though I may not have, I don't know how to say this, I have been too young or something to have any kind of conscious involvement, but I still had to look at it, or I wasn't going to get well. And let me see, I am 6 years sober. I'm still looking at that one. So it's not about getting it perfect the first time, because that for me was one of my hindrances, you know, that I had to get everything perfect and it had to look correct. Like I was going to be graded or something, you know, and I was going to be given some kind of degree at the end of this. And, you know, I'm like, I got to get this right, or I can't get this wrong. And I had to, you know, really look at this. And these things, when I was looking at them, especially certain areas, I felt like I was being stabbed, because it was difficult to look at. It was hard. And that's what it was supposed to do. And once I got through each one, you know, and looking really deep down inside at myself, where I was selfish, where I was dishonest, a lot of them I started to see, you know, where I was really not the innocent, sweet little girl that I thought I was. You know, I had some kind of involvement. Even in areas where I thought I had been too young to make any conscious decision, I still had to look at it and find what my part was. And I did have a part, you know, and that part for me today is that I had to stop thinking about it and get over it and just move on with my life. You know, there are certain areas where that is reality, and that was my reality. I mean, that's not all of it, and there's still sometimes these things come back and creep up. And that's where I need to go back and look at these things and start. That's what's so wonderful about this program. You can always go back. You know, it's not like where I used to think that I had to get it perfect that first time. You know, or I was going to fail. I don't know where I was going to go, you know, if I failed. It's like, it's not a test. But it didn't matter. And I love my sponsor because she was just like so chill and relaxed about it. And she just like, you know, it wasn't a big deal. And for me, it was just like this, I was, you know, like, oh my God, I got to get this right. And it just amazing what it did for me to move on from a lot of these hangups that I had, you know, because for me I had a lot of sex hangups, and it made a difference looking at myself, the reality. You know, and not what I thought it was.
So for this one, I had a similar experience to Anna where I really didn't think I had done any of this. You know, been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate. No. Hurt anyone? Maybe. But, you know, I was hurt much worse. So, I mean, doesn't it kind of cancel it out? I mean, isn't it all kind of like a wash at that point? Unjustifiably aroused, jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness. It took me a second, but like that was my first marriage, was just me doing that for like several years. I was drunk and when I got married and divorced the first time. So it took a second for me to realize like the part I had played in all of this. Because when I went through, started writing the inventory, that first go through, I went to my sponsor with some of this and was like, I really don't think I did anything. And she's like, I feel confident that is not true. Look at it again. And I was like, whoa. You know, I'm all huffy. Whoa. You know, but then I like go back and look at it, and I was like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot about that. Because me, when I'm drinking, when I do stuff like this, and then I feel yucky about it, I just pour more booze on it until the yucky feeling goes away. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I like to roll. When I'm out there doing whatever, and I feel bad about it the next day, I just avoid all of those people and make some new friends and just drink till those feelings go away. Because that's why I really drink, is because feelings are, ugh, like, no thank you. So, like, I just drink until the guilt and shame go away enough that I can go get hopped up enough to make some more bad decisions in this new venue over here. Where it talks about here, where we're asking ourselves, you know, was it selfish or not? And we're asking God to help us mold our ideal. Well, to me, that was an odd idea, that God would get involved in that. Like, so God is going to pick my boyfriend out? I'm not sure, like, how does this work exactly? You know, and I kind of struggled with that for a second. Like, does that mean when I meet somebody, like, I should go pray in the corner and be like, I think this guy is cute, God. What do you think? And God's going to be like, sure, go for it. You know, I don't know how that's going to work, right? But what I have to realize is going back to that idea again, that this is just another problem I'm tackling. It's just like anything else I do. Pause when agitated. Mm-hmm. Talk to somebody. Mm-hmm. If I'm not sure, I should talk to somebody about it. You know, I met this guy. I don't know what I should do. Let's not go away with him for the weekend until maybe we've spoken to someone else. You know, that might, you know. And I will tell you, like, I have gotten into situations, and, you know, I love guys, I love flirting, the whole eyes across the meeting, and we have that frisson of something, I love that, you know, I love dating, I love, not dating now, though. Ugh, I'm recently divorced, and I'm back out there for the first time in, like, 7 or 8 years. When did it get so disgusting? What is going on with everybody? It is so gross out there. Like someone's nana, like stuff keeps happening to me and I'm just like, oh my Lord, no, not, I don't want to do any of that, no thank you, gross. When did I get 65? I don't even, like, geez Louise. I'm like, so, but again, you know, we're trying to find that happy medium. You know, we're trying to stay on the beam with this, just like everything else in our life. God gave us sex so it can't be dirty or bad or wrong. Well, I mean, if you're doing it right, it's dirty. But it can't be any of those things that, like, I thought it was when I was drunk, right? So if God made it, it can't be bad. But if I feel bad about it, probably something is not quite 100% kosher there, right? So here are some of the things I ask myself when I'm getting involved. So I actually wrote this down because I was trying not to overshare up here, which I think we've passed that. So here are some of the questions I ask myself when I get into these situations, and I find them very useful. Would I feel embarrassed if someone I love found out what I was doing? And I don't mean the behind the closed door stuff. I mean, like, is this guy married? Does he have a girlfriend? Am I kind of hoping that if I, how you do it? Like, I'm going to break them up, right? Is it that kind of party? If, you know, then I need to start taking a closer look at it. Am I able to tell my sponsor what I'm up to? My sponsor is like, she's amazing. And she looks all like meek and mild-mannered, but she has told me stuff, always at the Village Inn, that I've darn near fallen out of my chair. Like, I've been like, you did what? To who? When? What? So I know at the very base of my soul, I could tell her anything. She would love me regardless. She would not care. She would not judge me. It would only be like, do you feel okay about it? If you feel okay about it, then we're good. So if I don't feel like I can tell her, danger. I'm in a danger zone. What kind of example am I for my son? Now, he's only 6. But how would I feel if he found out about what I was doing? Now, this is a yardstick I use for, like, every area of my life. If God showed up, would I be able to offer a true, reasonable explanation of what I'm doing? If God showed up, would I feel embarrassed or ashamed? And I don't mean the naked stuff. You're always a little embarrassed about the naked stuff. But I mean, if God showed up and was like, what are you up to? And I would be like, well, you know. And I tried to start, you know, prevaricating and like, no good. No good. I want to be like, well, God, I didn't know this guy was married. I did Facebook stalk him. He appeared to be single. It all looked okay. You know, I want to say I did my legwork. Now he's been dishonest, and that's not my side of the street. But on my side of the street, I did everything I was supposed to do to make sure this was an okay situation to be in. That's what I mean. Because it can apply to that, too. You know, am I going to the meeting because I think that guy is cute, or I'm going to the meeting because I'm in the meeting? Am I listening in the meeting, or am I kind of looking at this guy over here like, what's up? You know? Am I spending the whole meeting like, does my hair look weird? Did I eat all my lip gloss off during the day? Maybe I should go to the bathroom and see, like, how my face looks. I should check on. No. So what is it about? Motives. It's always about motives. It's always about fear. Am I afraid to be alone? Am I afraid if I don't get this guy, someone else is going to get him? Maybe I'll have a better guy. Maybe I won't. Maybe I better just take him because he's the one that's here right now. But these are some of the questions that I ask myself when I look at these kind of situations and behaviors. Now, ideally, I'm doing that before I'm in the situation. Sometimes it's during and sometimes it's after. But, you know, maybe I went on one date and I was kind of like, eh. I mean, when I was drinking, and even when I was newer in sobriety, a guy would ask me out, I would say yes. I don't care, do I like you, do I not like you, do I know you, do I not like you, do I like the cut of your jib, you're attractive, you're not attractive, you're sober, you're kind of sober, you're not really sober. Like, just, you're a man and you want to take me out, the answer is yes. Like, then we go out, right? We have a so-so kind of time. But in my head, I'm thinking, well, you know, if he would just get a haircut, change jobs, move out of his mom's house, get a driver's license, and throw those shoes away immediately, we could so, like, sail off into the sunset together. Right? He doesn't think my jokes are funny, but we'll work that out. You know, I love to read. He thinks reading is stupid. It's going to be fine. So then, like, even if I had a terrible time, we're going to go out again, right? And then because I kind of still don't really know how to be with you, I'm going to sleep with you because that's, like, what we do next. And now you're my boyfriend, and there we go, right? And it's 3 to 6 to 9 months later, and I'm looking at you like, what? Because I've had a chance for all that butterflies to wear off, all of the initial high excitement to wear off, and now I'm with somebody that I have absolutely no business being with. And if I had just taken a breath, asked myself some of these questions, talked to somebody I love and trust, and said, you know what, I'm gonna sleep on it. I can't tell you, like, I've guys have asked me out now, and I'm like, you know what, can I get back to you tomorrow? Would that be okay? Because sometimes my picker is super broken, and I might need a beat to, like, sort out if this is a good idea. And I think that's okay. And, you know, people who I'm trying to date who are sober, I can say things like, I'm going to talk that over with my sponsor and get back to you. And they're like, no problem. And if he's like, why do you need to talk to your sponsor? I'm like, answer is no. Don't even need to sleep on anything. But, you know, that's what a lot of this is about, is getting on the beam, man. We got to be right down the middle again. Just like everything else I'm trying to do while I'm sober, I got to be in that middle spot. I can't be too far this way or too far that way, just like anything else in my life.
All right. Thank you.
You're very welcome. All right.
I forgot where we were.
Five, paragraph five.
Thank you.
Sure.
Glad we got together. All right.
I really don't, actually.
Continuing on page 69, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice.
Okay. I really don't have much more to add. I mean, I think Kate really hit the nail on the head as far as, you know, how basically my whole sex inventory looked like.
Well, I wanted to share that a little bit about the fourth step from the 12 and 12 that I think is germane to this particular paragraph. This is from page 53. It says, the primary fact that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. Our egomania digs two disastrous pitfalls. Either we insist upon dominating the people we know, or we depend upon them far too much. And then if you go farther down that page, I have this line underlined. Always we try to struggle to the top of the heap or hide underneath it. So here we are talking about balance again. And I've got to ask myself that same, you know, I acknowledge that I have an inability to form a relationship with another human being. It's hard. Because I don't want to show you my soft pink underbelly. You know, I want to, you know, I'm like Chandler on Friends. I want to make a lot of jokes and, like, hide all my insecurities and, like, not really tell you too much or show you too much. Because I'm, what is it? It's fear again, right? I'm afraid that when you see the man behind the curtain, you're not really gonna, you like this version, right? You like the exterior, the Chandler version. You don't like my real personal self. And this applies for me, not just to romantic relationships, but family, friends, people at work. I struggle with that. You know, I wanna be over in the corner, like reading my book, drinking my coffee, like don't talk to me, don't look at me. I don't wanna talk to you. I don't wanna look at you. Like I have to make an effort to connect with other people. So then to try to have a intimate, romantic, sexual relationship with another person, you know, that's as vulnerable as I can be with another human being. I mean, end of story. That's as vulnerable as it is possible to be with another human being. And so I've got to look at that. Like, am I in the same place where I've gone too far one way or too far the other way again? Am I trying to run the whole relationship, or am I letting this person steamroll over me again because I'm afraid of being by myself, or he's going to leave me and I can't get someone else, or whatever the case might be? So I think it's important to remember that. Like, that's a function of my alcoholism, is that I feel disconnected from other people, and that it is a real struggle to overcome that disconnection. And, you know, I definitely have been guilty of stuff and sex in there, because that's an easy fix. We'll just do that and then, you know. But I learned being sober, sex and intimacy are not the same thing. It's not. Now, in the best situation, I have all of that going on. But again, I've got to return to that inventory. If I'm not sure what I'm doing, I need to take a beat and re-examine the situation. And I'll be honest with you, being willing to grow towards my ideal. This is part of what broke my marriage up. I just got divorced this past year, and I got to a place where I didn't trust my husband anymore. Well, that's a bedrock for me of a relationship, as trust. So if I don't trust you, then this whole thing is, I'm not really sure what we're doing here. And what I found was the time that we had been together, I had gotten farther and farther away from my ideal and more into just like, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm, like my personhood kind of got lost for a second. And I got away from the things that I hold true for myself and the way I want to live my life. And when I saw that was going on and I started unpacking that and inventorying that with my sponsor, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing in this relationship because this is not my ideal at all. We've gotten way, I don't know how this happened, we've gotten super off track here. And that was part of what led for me to dissolve the relationship, was because I can't be with somebody I don't trust, and I wasn't really sure how we could get that back. Because it has to be earned, right? Got to work towards that. We got to work on, we're both in this together and we're working on it. So it's important to remember that before I get too far down the line. Because me, I love getting engaged. I've been engaged a lot of times. I love getting married. Like, let's just move in together and like figure all this other stuff out later. You know, I love that. You know, the old joke about like, what does the alcoholic bring on a second date, a moving truck? That is semi-true for me at times. It's like, you know, it would just be easier if we were just in the same place all the time. And then, you know, again, I'm in this thing where I don't know how I got here again. So, you know, if I've made this ideal, I need to be checking that. Like, I need to check my progress. Like, am I moving towards that? Am I moving away from it? Have I changed my ideal to, you know, suit the situation that I'm in? Because, you know, he's really cute. Maybe we can make this work. What's up? No, I don't want to do that. Because eventually, like I said, the, you know, all those fuzzy feelings are going to wear off and we're going to be down to like the real stuff. The rubber's going to start hitting the road and it's not going to match up because I'm not where I need to be for my sobriety.
All right, thank you. And the final reading on page 70. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity and for strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself.
Okay, so it's very difficult to understand what reality is for a person like me when I've lived in a fantasy world for most of my life. I had this ideal in my mind of what a relationship should look like. And, you know, what Kate was saying about, you know, it doesn't matter what he presents now, but, you know, like when I get through with him, he's gonna be somebody different and he's gonna be what I want him to be. And it's so true. It's like, you know, I try to change somebody and I don't even realize that I'm doing it. That's the kicker. That's like what, oh my gosh. And then to look at that and think that I'm still like the sweet, really like happy-go-lucky person, I'm not. I'm like this great manipulator that's trying to make something out of nothing that is really there and trying to make a situation. And then when the situation doesn't work, it's like, it's all your fault. I didn't do nothing. I tried everything, you know. I did this, I did that. You know, I was always the one that was, you know, being the fixer and doing everything possible to make the relationship work. And today, that translates into, you know, stalker.
Such an unkind word.
I know. What is the other, like, I don't know, some of you might be too young if you've ever seen what's that movie with Michael Douglas and
that would be Fatal Attraction.
Fatal Attraction, you know, that type of thing, you know. I didn't kill any rabbits, but I came pretty close.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
So I mean, I lived in this fantasy world. So it was quite a transition to try and live here on Earth. You know, because I always thought, you know, that relationships were like, you know, what you see in the movies. You know, they all ride off into the sunset, but you never see what happens after they ride off into the sunset, right? You know, and that's the living together and getting to know each other and taking the good with the bad, you know, which was something that was very difficult with me. I wanted to take all the good, you know, and when things got bad, it was just like, whoa, wait a minute. That's not what I signed up for. I don't want any of this, you know. I don't want none of the trouble. I want everything to be golden all the time. And that's not reality, and that's not what relationships are. And I think that's a big reason of why I'm still single today, because I don't really understand that yet. You know, it's still something I'm working on. It's very difficult for me to form that intimate relationship because I have no clue. I really don't. Honestly, if I'm being honest with all of you, I really have no clue. I'm like I said, 6 years sober, but I am still learning how to have a good relationship with my family. You know, how to be a good friend. I still don't know how to be a good friend. I'm a terrible friend.
No, you're not. I still love you.
And there's, you know, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of faults that you find out, but you know, it's okay today. I'm not going to drink over them because today I know that I'm more aware of them, and I can take care of, I won't take care of them. I'm going to have God help me take care of it, because I can't do it. Because if I took charge again, we'd all be in trouble. Well, I'd be in big trouble. Listing what a real relationship should look like for me was one of my assignments, and that took me a long time. That took me a long time to really look at a real relationship. And like I said, I had no idea. I had no idea. I thought they were, you know, the TV kind. Mm-hmm. I want to say Romeo and Juliet, but no, that didn't end well, so. But, you know, the good ones. But they usually turned out like the ones, the bad movies, you know, where, you know, the girl turns psycho at the end, you know, that kind of thing. And then I sit there and wonder, why did he leave me? I don't understand, you know. That was my story for a long time. For a long time. So it's like I'm still, you know, like you had said, I'm still trying to figure it out. You know, but it's okay, and I'm not stressing over it, and I'm not freaking out over the fact that I'm alone. I kind of like being alone right now. It's really healthy for me. You know, I'm getting to know myself. You know, instead of depending on somebody else to complete me. Today I don't need it.
So my favorite part of this paragraph is where it says, the strength to do the right thing. Because that's what I need a lot of the time. One of my best friends and I were talking recently about, I kept saying, you know, I can't meet anybody. Why can't I meet anybody to go out with, you know? And he's like, oh, you're meeting people, just not anybody that you like want to get involved with. And I was like, oh, that's different, right? Because it's not really just like, oh, well, he seems okay. Because, you know, I'm trying to stick by that ideal that I'm trying to live by. And the way my friend described it was, when you're sober and you're trying to live a sober life, the longer that you do that And the farther you get along on the spiritual path, the fewer people there are on that. And so there's just less of us. So he's like, so of course, there's only, you know, there's probably only a handful of us. So that's why you're having a hard time. He's like, you're meeting people. These are just not the kind of people that you want to get involved with. And so what I had to do was, like, you know, I was on some, like, dating apps and stuff. But like I said, everybody on there is super gross. And so I got off of all of that because that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not saying I want to get married tomorrow. But, you know, somebody who, you know, you swap phone numbers and you're getting anatomy pictures within the first, like, 10 minutes. This is not the kind of person that I am, right? So I don't want to get involved with somebody who's living like that. So that, it just, it gets, not that I'm better than people. I just live differently. So there's only so many people who are doing it that way. So it is hard to try to meet somebody. And like Anna was saying, you know, I'm not looking for somebody to complete me. I actually get aggravated at a lot of romantic movies because it's like, well, a woman needs a man. No. No. My thing is, I am doing better emotionally, spiritually, mentally than I ever have in my whole life. I had this feeling a couple of weeks ago, and it took me a couple of days to figure out what it was, and I realized it was joy. Because it had been so long since I had felt that, I kind of forgot what that felt like. Happy is different. Happy is, it's my seventh drink at 7-Eleven and now it's free, yay me, that's happy. Joy is different. Joy is between me and God, and it's an inside job. But it took me a couple of days to realize that's what I'm feeling, I feel joy. So what I am looking for is someone to turn to and say, I feel joy today, and have him say, that's awesome. That's what I'm looking for now. Or for me to say, hey, I haven't seen Deadpool 2 yet. Do you want to go and see it? That's what I'm looking for, is just somebody to be the great, right? Not someone to complete me, because that's garbage. Not someone who's going to save me, because, you know, God's doing that. I don't need a person to help me with that. But just to have that person to share the cool stuff with. Like the other day, well, actually, it's been a couple of months ago, there was a potato under the gas thing at Wawa. There was an entire potato, like a whole baking potato, that was on the ground right next to the gas pump at Wawa. Now, this is why I love Facebook. I took a picture of it and was like, did anyone lose a potato? And I just thought this was so hilarious, right? But that's what I'm looking for, is like a person to send potato pictures to be like, can you believe I saw this potato at Wawa? It's amazing. Like, what were the circumstances that transpired that there is this lone, unsquished potato? It's amazing. So that's what I'm looking for, is like that potato person. But when I was drunk, that's not true. And when I was newly sober, that wasn't true. Because I gotta have a somebody, right? This seat can't be empty, because that is way too scary. And now I'm like Anna. You know, I live alone. My son is half with me and half with his dad. And the week I don't have him, I love him so much. But God, it is so good when he is not there, because I haven't lived by myself in, you know, I'm an old married lady. I haven't lived alone in years. So to like be in my apartment, and I'm the only one in the apartment. Like, what am I even going to do with myself? It's so exciting. You know, so it's different over time. But that's the part I have to remember, is the strength to do the right thing. Because I'll do the wrong thing. If I have a moment of weakness, I will do that wrong thing. So again, we're back to, you know, pause, talk to somebody, try to take a breath, you know, go hug Anna, hug Ryan, hug Legit, you know, put those feelings to the side for a second and try to move past it.
All right, thank you. That will end the sharing portion of our meeting. And we are now going to pass the seventh tradition basket. And the seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. And do we have any AA-related announcements?
Hi, my name is Tim. I'm out of
Hi, Tim.
Saturday of service. They have service at the AC Delphi Resource, June 23rd, 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. It's Bayside Presbyterian Church from 10 to 11. You got a group committee, ECM reports from 11 to 12. You got brunch and fellowship. And from 12 to 1:30, you have the VAC Delphi reports. Oh, it can be. If you're interested in service work and all that, and you'd like to hear about this, come see me. I got the address and all that.
Thank
you. Melissa.
Melissa. My home group, West Kent, we are having our 38th anniversary meeting on Wednesday, June 27th. We meet at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church off Princess Anne Road. We will be eating at 7. We're providing the bulk of the food. If you wanted to bring a salad or a dessert, that would be awesome. Our speaker is KH, so we'll be eating at 7, and Kay will be speaking at 8 o'clock. See me after if you have any questions.
Thanks, Melissa. Okay.
All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. And do we have anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety so that we can welcome you?
I'm Michelle.
Hey, Michelle, welcome.
Welcome.
All right, we have literature available on the table to your left. If you can fold it, it's free. Books, see a home group member to purchase. And sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up. And reminders, smokers, please use the butt can presided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And in closing, we want to thank Anna and Kate again. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, just off the street, off of 22nd Street. And can I get someone to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Hi, I'm Michael. Our book is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.
All right, close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.